This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. So seldom do we Westerners think of our own flesh as meat, writes my guest Cy Montgomery. But she was a potential meal while she studied the man-eating tigers of Sundarban, a forest between India and Bangladesh. She says wherever tigers are found, they evoke reverence and fear. But the tigers of Sundarban are the only tigers that are known to eat people. In her new book, Spell of the Tiger, Montgomery writes about the animals and the beliefs that surround them. Her previous book was about the great apes and the primatologists who study them. Montgomery told me that the people of Sundarban revere the man-eating tigers and attribute several magical powers to them.
First, they can fly through the air. I was told this again and again, that the tiger flies through the air, that it becomes invisible. They say that the tigers can leap onto your boat out of the water, and that you won't feel the boat rock when this 400 to 500 pound animal lands there, that you won't hear a sound, and that the first sign you have that a tiger has come on board and killed a person in your group is that you'll hear the splash when the tiger dives overboard again with the man in his mouth.
How did you decide to study these tigers?
Well, I write about people's relationship with animals. This is something that it seems we need to know more about. Particularly here in the West, we seem to have a paucity of relationships possible between us and other beings. It seems like our relationship usually consists of we slaughter them and they die. There must be, I've thought, other ways to relate to animals. And I was very interested in relationships between people and predators, relationships that worked, relationships that helped us see the world as whole with both people and predators in it. And that's what led me to look at tigers and ultimately led me to Sundarban.
Did you come across a lot of people in Sundarban who had been attacked by tigers who had relatives or friends who were killed by tigers?
Many, many people had eyewitness accounts of family members and friends who were killed by tigers. I was amazed at how frequently this happened. In fact, between my first and second trips over there, in the space of 3 weeks that I went home to celebrate Christmas, one of the people I had met in December had been eaten by the time I returned in January. There's entire villages over there that are tiger widow villages made up entirely of people who have lost a father, a son, a husband, or an uncle to tiger attack.
Would you share one of the stories with us that you heard about a tiger attack?
Oh, certainly. There's so many of them. One of the more chilling stories was told to me by a fellow in Bangladesh. And he told me that he was sitting on his boat with several companions in the evening. And he was talking to his companion, and he just turned aside for a moment. And when he turned back to resume speaking with his companion, the man was gone. And then he heard the splash. And everyone flashed their torches on the riverbank, and there they saw in the beam of light this great, huge, wet cat emerging from the river, carrying the person in its jaws, and then it disappeared into the forest.
Now, it almost sounds improbable, you know, that it could happen so quickly, that there you wouldn't hear when the tiger came.
Yeah, so many of the things that you hear people tell you, and they tell you this in good faith, too. There's no reason for them to try to lie to you about this. And many folks who tend to look at things in a more scientific way would say, well, you know, this is impossible. Tigers can't fly through the air. You know, tigers can't disappear and become invisible. But it turns out a lot of the things that the people told me were factually true, but not in the way that we would initially think of it.
What do you mean?
Flying through the air. Tigers can't fly through the air like Tinkerbell, but they can leap for 25 feet. As far as disappearing into thin air, becoming invisible, Tigers don't get see-through all of a sudden, but you can even go to the zoo and watch a tiger in an exhibit. And that tiger really can become invisible behind a blade of grass. I've gone through a lot of zoos as part of promoting this book, and frequently you'll see a whole truckload of tourists going past the tiger exhibit. And the person whose job it is to explain all the animals in the different exhibit will say, "Oh, I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, the tiger isn't on display today." And the tiger is right there, but no one can see it. They really can become invisible, but not the way we might initially expect. So the stories are important for that reason, in that often they really are excellent natural history observations.
My guest is Sai Montgomery. She's written a new book called Spell of the Tiger. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Sai Montgomery. Her new book, Spell of the Tiger, is about man-eating tigers in the forest between India and Bangladesh. Now, how do people in Sundarban try to protect themselves against tiger attacks?
Well, this is what really drew me to Sundarban. The people there don't have guns. And even if they did, it's doubtful that they would use this to protect themselves for a number of reasons. They don't want to eradicate the tiger, even though hundreds of them are killed every year. What they do to protect themselves range from these wonderful face masks that are worn on the back of the neck. This was an idea that was conceived by a person who was a member of a science club in Calcutta. And he remarked the well-known fact that tigers prefer to attack from behind. They don't like to attack from the front. So people began wearing these little plastic face masks that the Forest Department provided for them on the back of their heads. The idea was that the tiger couldn't find which was the real front. And in fact, for several years, tigers would sometimes follow people wearing these things, and they would sometimes growl with annoyance. But they did not attack people wearing these masks.
Now, let me stop you here. You know, you say in your book that tigers even don't eat the face, that tigers don't like to look at the face of a victim.
Yes, wasn't that amazing? I was astonished to find these references. It's so well embedded in our tiger lore that they don't like our faces, they don't like our heads. I even read one account in which it appears a tiger chewed the head off a person, it was actually a person with leprosy, so that the annoying head would then roll downhill and he wouldn't have to look at the thing. They really don't like our faces or our heads. They don't like looking at our open eyes, staring at them.
So people started wearing face masks on the back of their head to fool the tigers, and were they effective?
They know this worked for several years. The odd thing is that when I went back, the only time in my three trips that I could ever find a single party who carried the masks with them was the third trip. And this suggests that the people don't believe they work anymore. But then, you know, the same is true of seatbelts. Americans, we know seatbelts work, but unless there's a law, we just don't tend to wear them.
What else do people do to try to prevent tiger attacks?
The Forest Department has come up with these ingenious clay dummies, which are fashioned to look just like regular woodcutters and fishermen. They dress them in clothes that people have worn so that the dummies smell like us. They put them in the forest, and around the neck of the dummy, they circle some galvanized steel wire, and this is hooked up to a car battery. And the tigers will attack these dummies. But when they do, they literally get the shock of their lives. And forest workers have heard the tigers screaming in pain and possibly in anger when this happens. And the tiger is supposed to learn from this experience not to attack people anymore. But no one really knows what lesson the tiger takes away from this experience. The main thing that people rely upon to protect themselves from these tigers is prayer.
The people in the Sundarban pray to the tiger god, Dachshund Roy. Who is
right.
The tiger god? Tell us something about him.
According to their old legends, which may predate Hinduism. It was Dakin Roy, the tiger god, who originally owned all the riches of Sundarban, all the fishes and all the timber and all the bee combs and all the land, and that to this day they believe he protects this land against intruders, and that to gain entry to his territory, you must enter with great reverence. And most people, when they go into Sundarban in a group to either fish or cut wood or gather honey, if they can afford it, they take with them a priest of sorts, who, if he's Hindu, they call a gunin. If he's Muslim, he's a fakir. And they will take this holy man with them so that he can pronounce the special words of mantras, of prayers, that he can cast a spell that makes the place safe for them to work, and that he can convey to the tiger god their sincerity and their humility as they approach his land.
Well, you write in your book that even the forest department in India won't send in timber cutters without a shaman to honor the tiger god.
That is so. And in fact, the biggest worship service which is held for the tiger god and the forest goddess is financed and put on by the forest department itself.
Even though the tiger is a threat to the people in Sundarban don't want to kill off the tiger. At least that's the impression you were left with.
That's absolutely true. They realize that if they kill off the tiger, the guardian of their world will have been slain.
How is the tiger the guardian of their world?
Well, Sundarban exists at the confluence of two miracles, really. One is that here between India and Bangladesh, in this 10,000 square kilometer tract, is the largest mangrove forest left on the face of the earth. How can this be left here between two of the most overpopulated countries on the globe, this enormous mangrove swamp? And the other miracle is that here are more tigers than anywhere else on earth. How can this be? Well, it can be because the tigers there are so aggressive. The reason that that mangrove forest has not been cut down is because it's being protected by 500 hungry man-eating tigers. That is the only reason that people have not gone in there and cut down that whole forest.
If the tiger were the only thing standing in the way of developing that part of the forest, wouldn't there be developers with plenty of high-tech weapons willing to take their chances?
Well, it would be very difficult to wipe out those tigers. Interestingly, although elsewhere, as you know, tigers are highly endangered and might even disappear from the wild in 10 years, in Sundarban, it is so hard to even see them that people do not hunt them. There's a great incentive to hunt tigers elsewhere because their body parts are used to make all kinds of potions and elixirs for which people will pay huge amounts of money. But in Sundarban, there are no poachers of that kind. You can't hunt out the tigers there because they're going to get you first. And there's a number of other impediments to development. It's a very dangerous track. There's no roads there, only waterways. There's cyclonic storms. There's man-eating crocodiles. There's, I think, 9 different kinds of very aggressive sharks. The water is bad to drink. There's many, many reasons why people haven't gone in there, but top of the list is these 500 tigers out there ready to eat you.
Cy Montgomery is the author of the new book, Spell of the Tiger. This is Fresh Air.